this show, Working It Out, is working out jokes with comedian friends. This is actually what we do.
Yes.
In real life. Like, we're on the phone at least a couple times a month.
Yes.
What are your favorite qualities of someone to bounce jokes off?
Positivity.
Good, good. Love it. Ding, ding, ding.
I think listening.
Listening's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, you gotta listen before you can actually give a take.
Right.
Or an addition.
Yeah. And then I think also knowing the person helps.
Yep.
Because like, hey man, this is what you're good at, or this is a, you always, you know, sort of with me, bring it back to like, yeah, Greg, there's that thing that you saw or that you did that's sort of exterior, but what does it have to do with you?
That is the voice of the great Greg Warren. Greg Warren is one of my oldest friends. As a matter of fact, he introduced me to my wife, the poet J. Hope Stein. He introduced me to Jenny almost 20 years ago. One of my closest friends, one of the people who in my life I work out jokes with all the time. And in some ways, this podcast is inspired by my friendship with people like Greg, a hugely funny person, really great comic, supportive friend. I should point out that he will be on tour in Youngstown, Ohio, Pittsburgh, Omaha, Louisville, all of that on gregwarrencomedy.com. I am in my final week in London. If you want to come see me at the Wyndham's Theater, there's only a few seats left. And then I'm going to be announcing some club dates only on burbigs.com, the mailing list. So if you join the mailing list, you'll be the first to know about those very limited club shows that sell out right away. There's like three or four cities where I'm doing shows. Then I go to Boston for Christmas. I'm doing 8 shows at the Wilbur. I'm calling those shows Christmas Parmesan. It is all new material. It's a totally different show from The Old Man in the Pool, but we're calling it Christmas Parmesan. And then as we turn the corner in the new year, I'm calling the new show Please Stop the Ride, which harkens back to the bit from My Girlfriend's Boyfriend when I'm on the Scrambler. It's all new material in Vancouver, in Seattle. Get those tickets right away. Then I'll be in Walla Walla. I'll be in Portland, Oregon. All of this is on burbigs.com. I love this conversation with Greg Warren today. One of my oldest friends, and certainly one of my oldest friends in comedy. He has a new special that is on YouTube that Nate Bargatze directed. It's called The Salesman. It's on YouTube. It is fantastic. It is, I couldn't recommend it more highly. And I hope you enjoy my conversation with the great Greg Warren. What's funny is when we met at the Stress Factory in New Jersey, we both had nothing. And when I say nothing, I mean like we were both sort of broke. I think you were staying with your brother in Jersey.
Yeah.
I was staying on my sister's couch in Brooklyn. And we were just kindred spirits because we thought each other were funny and nice.
Yeah.
And like that was what the friendship was based on.
Yeah.
And other than my improv group in college, I'd say you're my oldest comedy friend.
Wow.
Am I yours?
Well, no, because I'm older than you,
right.
So I was doing it long before that. I got a job out of college.
Yeah.
And
Procter and Gamble.
Procter and Gamble.
Yeah.
And went to Houston for 5 years and met a bunch of guys down there. And then I moved to Ohio and met like a group there. And that's when I was that's when I met you was sort of the end of the Ohio run. So
it's funny that I never even made that connect. I know you're from Houston. I know you lived in Houston for a bit.
Yeah.
And of course, you talk about working at Procter & Gamble in the new special.
Yeah. I was thinking about it on the way over here. I'm like, this thing that I shot, it's a lot about that time when I met you. I want to say one of my favorite things I did when I lived here in the city for 4 years.
Yeah.
And it was the performance where you gave out ice cream at the end.
Carnegie Hall, yeah.
Carnegie Hall.
It was the final performance of My Girlfriend's Boyfriend we did. Carnegie Hall, we gave out ice cream in the street and we wore ice cream hats.
Yeah, you and Ira Glass, right?
Yeah, Ira Glass.
So I had my roommate at the time, this guy, Ryan, I don't think we were roommates then. This kid I knew, Ryan Beck, young comic. And I didn't want to bug you that week. I knew that it was a big deal.
Yeah.
And I just was like, you know what, man? you need to see this. It's a different way of doing comedy. And I bought two tickets and we sat up at the top and watched the show. And I was like, this is it's a completely different way of doing it. Like, this isn't what you have to become, but if you just go around to the New York clubs or you just go around, like, you're not going to see this. Like, this is a, you know.
So nice. That show was my girlfriend's boyfriend. It was about me meeting Jenny and you, my wife, Jenny. And you were the person who introduced me to Jenny.
I know. And I got screwed in that performance.
Because I didn't use your name?
Yeah, which I do in jokes all the time. But
I made it Andy.
You made it this other guy.
Andy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I merged you and my other friend Andy Andy.
You do, like when you're writing a novel or you got to move these two characters.
It can't be two characters. It's too confusing for the audience's brain to juggle two, three characters. So then you're like, okay, that's the friend character. The friend character is, in this case, Andy. Greg got screwed.
It's interesting that you went with Andy. I mean, you know.
Well, he was there at the car accident. No, but you would... No, it is unfair. It is unfair. I should set the record straight. It was Greg Warren who introduced me to my wife, Jenny. I'm forever beholden to you for that. And do you remember the night that you introduced me?
Everything about it. Because I remember Jenny was working for College Sports Television.
That's right, which is now CBS College Sports.
And I was doing this gig the first time. There was an NCAA wrestling tournament was in St. Louis.
Yeah.
And they had asked me to do a show for all the coaches the night before the tournament.
Because you wouldn't say this, but you were an All-American wrestler, college wrestler, which is unbelievable.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, started to hear on radio shows and that, oh, there's this wrestler guy. And I was like, guys, I know these groups. I know this event. It's a bunch of coaches that haven't seen each other in 10 years, and they all get drunk, and it's ex-coaches, ex-wrestlers. It's not a good idea. Well, they just kept pushing. I was like, guys, it's a terrible idea. And they just talked me into it. I'm like, yeah, this is going to be different. Yeah. So that night I went up and Jenny was there and she was part of College Sports TV. So I went up and I got through it, you know, and had a couple of good moments, but it was hard.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Jenny's pretty. And I was like, hey.
Thank you on her behalf.
You know, you were in town for a college gig in Springfield or something.
That's right.
I was like, and I had one thing they did give me was like a suite room at the Hyatt.
Yes.
And passes. So I had this really nice hotel room down at the Hyatt. I think I was living
in the mall.
Yeah. I think I was living in LA at the time.
Yeah.
And so I was there and you happened to come in town and I was like, hey, come, you just stay with me, you know?
Yeah.
I remember to Jenny, I was like, hey, come out. We're going to go. You know, we're going to go to this bar and we went to this.
No, but there's actually one thing different, which is you introduced us on a staircase in that mall where that connected the hotel and the mall.
Yeah.
And I remember it because I said, I fell in love with Jen immediately. And I've never had that, literally, to this day, of course. And previous that. And I just go, Greg, you got to convince her to come out. And so you asked her to come out. And I think she was a little bit like, maybe. And then you're like, no, you gotta. And then she thought she was on a date with you.
This is interesting because it's much like that comic exercise that I was talking about. If it was me, if I always had to convince her to go out with me, the pressure would have been on and I would have flubbed it. But I was like, this is for Mike.
Yeah.
So I was, it's another guy. I was,
you were, you were
I was
going
in the zone.
To the, I was you were
in the
going
zone.
To the mat.
I can
to use a wrestling term, you're going to the mat for your friend.
I can sell Mike a lot better than I can sell myself.
The salesman. You're the salesman.
Yeah. So, and we went to McGurk's, which is a great Irish
classic St. Louis pub.
Yeah, it was on St. Pat's Day.
Yeah.
And McGurk's on St. Pat's Day is nuts.
Bananas.
Yeah, and we went there and we had some beers. And Jenny was staying at the hotel, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And then, I remember.
We went back and I think a friend of yours drove us back to the hotel and like she and I were in the back seat together and it was like a really sweet moment we had. And I was just like, oh my God, I'm like in love with this person.
Yeah, you guys right away, I just remember there was some talk of like, you were both young people in New York City and you like, I don't know if you knew this, you maybe knew a little bit of the same people,
it's
but
true.
You knew some stuff, you know, like that. There's immediately like, I know this thing that people do in New York City.
Well, Jenny and I always talk about how if we didn't meet there in St. Louis, I feel like we would have met in 10 other places kind of thing.
Yeah,
like we were in the same universe. She was in the East Village and I was in Brooklyn and it was just kind of like, But yeah, and then I remember she and I reference you to this day. I don't even know if I've ever told you this, because I called you. I remember, and I was like, so that girl Jenny you introduced me to, we're like dating. It seems pretty serious. And you go, yeah, she's a cool girl, man. She's a cool girl. And so now whenever I want to compliment Jenny, I go, you're a cool girl.
Yeah.
Things like that just stick.
Yeah.
What's funny about you coming on the show is that this show, Working It Out, is working out jokes with comedian friends. This is actually what we do.
Yes.
In real life. Like, we're on the phone at least a couple times a month.
Yes.
What are your favorite qualities of someone to bounce jokes off?
Man, positivity.
Good. Love it. Ding, ding, ding.
Positivity.
That's good.
I remember running jokes by my little brother, who's very funny.
Yeah.
Early on, and he was just like, eh. And
Who needs it?
You just die on the inside. You give up. You'll say, well, yeah, that's terrible. Yeah,
so you got a yes and.
Positivity. Yeah. And
And by the way, when we say yes and, it's not yes and forever. It's just yes and that day.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's pretty good. I like that, you know.
Yeah.
And then maybe it dies on the vine, like, over the course of a couple of weeks, but let it die on its own. Don't kill it.
Yes.
That's not what you're there for.
Yeah. That's, I wasn't able to articulate that. That's great.
I'm here to articulate for you.
Man, I wish you could do more of that. positivity is a big one.
Number one, positivity.
Yeah. I think, so a lot of times when somebody's pitching you a joke, you get an idea and you're like, I know how to tag that.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to do that, but you got to give the thing time to develop. Mm-hmm. You want to hear the whole thing.
Yeah.
And it's a balance.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to forget your idea, but you also want to let them get going on you know, their thing.
Yeah.
So listening, I think listening.
Listening's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to listen before you can actually give a take.
Right.
Or an addition.
Yeah. And then I think also knowing the person helps.
Yep.
Because like, hey man, this is what you're good at, or this is a thing you ought to, you always, you know, sort of with me bring it back to like, yeah, Greg, there's that thing that you saw or that you did that's sort of exterior, but what does it have to do with you?
Right.
You know, and you're really good. And then, you know, if you watch your shows, that's all of your stuff, but I forget that sometimes. Or sometimes, you know, you think there's this point that's just very, like, observational humor and extraneous, and you're like, no, there's something, there is a connection between you and that thing. You wrote it, there's some connection.
You wrote it, you're obsessed with it, yeah. And it's honestly all we care about.
Yeah.
All we care about is how you feel about it, not how we feel about it.
Yeah. Sometimes there's this tendency to go bit hopping where you're like, it's like whack-a-mole almost. It's like, well, yeah, that's an idea I have. There's nothing there. I got to find the hot one that's just there instantly.
Yeah.
And you know, you're all about, okay, no, you thought of this before you dismiss it and go to the next one. Maybe there is something there. Let's fool around with it. And maybe whatever's going to happen isn't going to happen for 6 months, but keep investing in that thing because you thought about it. There's something to it, you know.
And the special that you literally just came out with that Nate Bargatze produced and directed.
Yeah.
Is based on conversations we've been having for 20 years.
Loosely.
Like for example, you've talked about working at Procter & Gamble.
And yeah.
I've always been like, dude, this is like great for the stage.
Yeah,
and you're always, you were reluctant for a long time.
Well, I tried. I mean, I made a lot of runs at it.
Yeah.
I remember definitely a lot of talks with you going back to way, way back where I was pitching Flute Man.
A bit about me
playing the clarinet and wrestling. And you were like, that's it. That's it. And I remember you saying something to me that was, you know, a hard thing to say, I think, but it was like, man, your ideas are really, really good. And you're not quite getting to the joke. Mm. You're not quite getting to the thing. And I knew it, but for you to tell me that, I knew it. And I still, it's got me to this theory that I've thought for. So you have like, like, you know, over here is this idea for a joke.
Yeah.
And over here is the thing that pops.
Yes.
And you can put it in a special.
Yes.
Okay. I still, to this day, can't quite explain what goes on between here and here.
What do you mean?
Like, I don't, you have this idea, and
yeah.
then you do all this writing, and you go on stage, and you mess around with it, and, you know, you apply different techniques, and you, there's just some, a lot of it's innate, and you're like, I gotta say it that way, I gotta say it that way, and then eventually you get to this thing that works. If you continue to attempt it,
yeah.
eventually the space gets a lot. Like, eventually some, and I wasn't, you had got there quicker than I did. You just sort of were like, especially the two-drink mic, like, you sort of like, I have this premise, and then it's this bam thing that could go on a late night set.
Yeah.
I couldn't get there. And it just took me a lot longer. And I've, you know, started to figure out. I remember that. The other thing that you've told me that I tell a lot of people is, you know, you've said several times, like, you're hitting false bottoms on these premises.
Okay.
Like, you think you're done with that premise.
Yeah.
And you're not.
Yeah.
And that one, I think, has helped me a lot.
Like, I always tell comics, what's your best joke? Add 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, don't work on your worst joke.
Yeah.
We're always working on our worst joke.
Yeah.
As though we're going to save it. It's like, shit's not savable. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
You
want me to list them?
I always say your best bit is the thing you should spend time on. Your thing that you think is a 10 could be an 11.
Yes. And so back to the question is the Procter & Gamble stuff. I took runs at it for years.
Yeah.
And I took runs at it. And then over the pandemic, I got a little sillier with it. And I sort of adopted this. A lot of it's truth, but lot of it's not. Like, adopted this character of fierce Procter & Gamble loyalist.
Serious loyalist.
Loyalist. And part of that is true. Like, I am loyal. I know more about peanut butter than almost any, you know, I know a lot about peanut butter.
Settle down, Greg. Jesus Christ, Greg.
It's an important topic.
It's a podcast.
Yeah, I know, man. But it's also an opportunity for me to look into the camera and tell people about the different brands of peanut butter, okay? Jif's where it's at. The rest of it's garbage.
Oh, my God. Jesus Christ. Jif. You're going to hold your ground on Jif?
Yes, I am. I
You're going to dismiss the organic peanut butters that don't have added sugar and salt?
And then they're inedible. You're talking about the thing that has the inch of oil on top of
it. Yeah, you mix it up. It doesn't take that long.
Oh, you mix it up. You mix it. So now I'm supposed to just make the peanut butter. Just hand me a bag of peanuts and a hammer next time. I'll smash them up myself, Mike.
I mean, I know you're an expert, but, like, you're really missing it.
You know, let's look at the market shares, Mike, and see who's wrong, okay?
No, I mean, look, I'm not saying that their business model isn't good. When you sell people garbage for a dollar, you're going to make a profit.
A dollar, really? A dollar? You don't even know the price points. You don't know the price points, man. The main size is 18 ounce. When I was selling it, okay, a 2 for $3 is the best deal of the year. That's the back to school ad. Two for three on the shelf every day, $2.29. I bet you right now you're looking at
get this guy out of here, Gary. Get this guy out of here. Go to your dumb bodega
and it's probably $3.29.
Get him out.
I'm not leaving, Gary.
So this is called the slow round. What is the best piece of advice anyone's ever given you that you used?
I got this advice from a guy named Ron Mori one time when I was young that said, listen to your act, but not intently. So like, listen to your act when you're doing the dishes or driving or something, because there's just, you start to make adjustments that you don't even know you're making.
That's great. That's great.
You think so?
Because not only is it great advice on its face, but actually, there's a subtle second layer to it, which is it's hard to listen to your own voice. So when you record yourself, you're like, oh my God, this is like listening to a voicemail of myself.
Yes.
I hate my own voice. We all hate our own voices.
And you become desensitized to it if you do it over time. It's that thing where, you know how you're walking through the back of the room?
Yeah.
And you hear, you know, I can do it with you, or you can do it with me, or my friend. You hear one of your friends do something and you're like, I don't want to fix that joke. You switch those two words and do that. Yeah. But when you listen to yourself, you're, do I sound like that? Am I going to be a failure? Why did I quit my job? Like, you don't even get to the thing.
Why did I quit my job?
Like,
Dude, that's so funny.
I was making six figures selling Pringles. I would have been retired. You know, like all that's going on, not the thing about which word do you need to take out. But if you listen long enough, the guy that you're hearing on the cassette tape eventually just sounds like any other comic. You're just hearing the sort of the technical aspects, not the emotional aspects.
Right. You're detached emotionally from the actual recording.
Well, if you do comedy long enough, you're detached emotionally from everything.
What's your favorite joke? You must know a joke.
Oh, it's that talking dog joke.
Okay. Can you say it?
Yeah. Guy goes to the, he's looking in the paper, it says talking dog, $50. And he's like, I got to go to this guy's house. So he goes to the guy's house. He goes, guy answers the door. He goes, is this the place with the talking dog? Guy goes, yeah. He goes, well, can I see him? He goes, yeah, man, he's in the back. So he walks back there and there's this dog reading the paper, you know? And he goes, is that him? He goes, oh, are you looking for me? He's like, you gotta be kidding me. He goes, you're the talking dog? He goes, yeah, it's me. He goes, well, can you tell me about yourself a little bit? He goes, yeah. He goes, I'm originally Canadian. He goes, I was a snow rescue dog. That's how I kind of got started. And obviously, I was better than a lot of the other snow rescue dogs because I could talk, you know? Like, these guys would be lost, and I could find them, be like, hey, are you in there? You can find them. He goes, and then I got moved into, actually, the FBI, the American FBI. I was doing some work as a drug-sniffing dog because, I could communicate better with the officers, and you could see what happened. And then he goes, I've been lately doing some work as a bomb-sniffing dog, and it's really going well. And the guy goes, hold on, man. He goes, this is an amazing specimen. He goes, why are you only charging $50 for me? He goes, because he's a liar, man. He doesn't do any of that stuff.
Great joke. Because he's a liar.
He didn't do any of that stuff, man.
I've never heard that joke.
You never heard that joke?
Great joke.
Yeah. Some kid is a Boston comic. You know those guys. I think, like, the guy that told it originally was Tony V.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is it Tony V's joke?
I don't know if it's Tony V's joke, but he's
did
the
it
one
on
that
stage
this
a bit.
Boston comic told me. He was opening for me in Connecticut, and he told me that joke, and I was like, it goes on for a while. You're like, oh, God.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, man, that's
a, that's a hilarious joke. Yeah. Is there a song that makes you cry?
Yeah, man, probably. Probably Cats in the Cradle, you know.
Mm. Why does it make you cry, that one?
Just because it's about fathers and sons.
Yeah.
You know.
You have a father?
I do. Yeah. He's great, man. He's my favorite person.
Aw.
Yeah, I love him.
Cats in the Cradle definitely pulls at your heartstrings.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Because it just goes to the heart of, like, however you hear songs. It's like, it's just about the journey from childhood to adulthood and the similarities. It's like similarities between childhood and adulthood.
Yeah, not focusing on the right things.
Yeah.
That's
a great one.
Yeah, it's just sort of reminding you that you don't have everybody forever. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I want to work out a couple jokes. It's funny.
Awesome.
It's funny you should say that, because the father-son thing. I've been talking a lot about my dad, and especially in relation to like me being a father now.
Yeah.
And so like the other day I was experimenting with this joke where I go like, when I was a kid, my dad would feel unappreciated and he would just go, oh, I guess you just need me to send the check around here. Just send the check. And I was always like, Dad's crazy. And now I'm like a grown up with like a wife and a child. And I'm like, he was right about that check. I mean, he didn't have to yell, but he wasn't wrong. I did that last night for the first time, and it's one of those ones that's like half written, but yeah. It's definitely something there.
Yeah, wow, that's and also the way that you animate. I mean, send the check could be an earworm type thing. You have a few usually in whatever hour you're working on. There's a send the check is
send the check.
Send the check.
Send the check.
Yeah, because it's a yeah.
Just send the check.
I guess I'll just send the check then, huh?
I did a callback to it later, I think. It's but yeah, no. So, and then I usually pair that with the thing about my dad where I just go like, you know, my dad would shout when I was a kid and we didn't even understand why. He'd be like, God damn it, I'm eating pretzels, you know. We'd be like, is he angry? Is he hungry? Like, what is the emotion being expressed? But but I do think a lot about my dad in relation to raising a child.
Yeah.
And then also like this thing of like, you know, there's like a, the whole thing of you grow up and then you go like, you see your parents as people and you go like, oh yeah, he's just doing his best. They're doing, that's the first time being a dad. That's like a famous line. That's not my line, but it's like their first time being a parent, your first time being a kid.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember like just seeing at my mom's funeral, just seeing pictures of her with me, you know, like just a picture like her holding me when I was like two or something. And I'm like, she's a child. She is a child. Like my mother, she's just, you know.
Right, she's like, you're probably in her 20s or
something. Yeah, my mom was very young. Yeah, she was early 20s.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was like, what? Yeah, I mean, the dumb things I did when I was
right
in my 20s, awful, you know, just mistakes.
People should, I mean, if there's any takeaway from this, I think, is like, when we talk about like our parents and all that stuff, it's like kind of like go easy on yourself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I feel like I made so many mistakes, teenager, 20s. I mean, my 30s and 40s have been great, but
I don't know of one, really. not one mistake, I don't think.
But man, those 20s. No, it's no, but it is like,
I think you're gonna regress in your 50s. You're gonna like,
could be. Yeah. But I do think that there's a degree to which like we should give ourselves a break a bit.
Yeah. So send the check.
Yes, send the check.
I love it.
Do you have any riffs on it? Do you have any like,
I feel like, one thought is like, he's like, you just want me to send the check, right? And unfortunately you're like, yeah.
Right. No, that's right.
Yeah, cause you're just.
No, they are actually asking for it at St. Mary's. It's overdue.
I love you.
I know this isn't the right time.
Yeah, but I do need the check.
I actually do need the check.
And it's probably the wrong time to ask. I need another check.
Yeah, like, I need another. I know this is, I feel like it might be a sensitive subject, but I need another check. I've forged your signature a handful of times, and I just don't think I can do it anymore.
Timing's horrible here, but I need another check. I could send it if that's the issue. The other thing is like, specificity is always,
yes.
Like, what was the instance? What's he sending checks for?
What was the instance? And it was schools, you know. You know, St. Mary's School growing up, and it would be, I'm trying to think what we'd, you know, we'd have a mortgage and a car, and I'm trying to think. It's a good question, but it would, you know, actually, you know what? Soccer camp.
Yeah. I think if you get to those,
yes,
when it's like the thing where it's like, this is a legitimate expense, this is legitimate checks, but with kids, there's like, this thing, this thing, now we're getting a little bit crazy, and that thing's important too, but it's like, you know, is there
it's
something
weird
that
you grow up and you realize just like the money just goes.
Yeah.
The money just travels away from you.
Yeah.
Because that's a grown-up thing. Like, when you're a kid, like, you literally don't clock that someone has to earn the money that you're spending.
Yeah.
Like, you go to soccer camp, and it's like, it's costing someone $800. Yeah. And you're thinking about, I got to wake up at 6 to do push-ups.
Yeah. You're like, dreading that. Yeah.
You're not even clocking that someone's actually, like, financing your life.
Oh, yeah. I had private clarinet lessons. And I was like not practicing and dreading going.
Yeah.
And then like, this is costing them. My dad was a teacher.
Yeah.
My mother was a writer. This is costing real money.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not putting much into it.
I think that's the thing I need to get to with the bit. Like if it's going to end up being in the show long-term, I think you got to find the love in the bit. Like, I think I need to find the love for my dad in the bed, who I do love.
Yeah.
And who I do appreciate. But I think, like, the jokes have to be counterbalanced with, like, that he's, you know, he was underappreciated. Like,
He's a father. That's sort of a...
And also, instead of being, like, dad's crazy, I could be like, hey, thanks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, hey, thanks for that.
Yeah, you can. But as a kid, you're not gonna...
No.
You probably don't want your kid to think about it that much.
No, you're right.
I think there's got to be some silly activities that you were involved in that, I say silly, but just like, those are the kind of activities that build an artist or whatever. But
yeah.
But I think there's something that your dad wrote a check for that's funny.
Like an outrageous thing, a birthday party or yeah. Do you have any things that you're working on that are like half bits right now, premises? Like, what do you, when you go on stage in St. Louis, because that's where you work out a lot, right?
Yeah.
When you go to the Funny Bone there, like, what's your 10 minutes that you're like, I don't know what this is yet?
Yeah, I'm fooling around. It's gotten a little bit farther down the line, but I'm sort of based on what we were talking about with the hotels.
Yeah.
Is Walgreens, you know, when you go to Walgreens, like, there's good things about them. There's a lot of them, and they're open late.
Yep.
But past 10 o'clock, they're just kind of open. Like, it's very,
that's
like,
a great
you walk
premise.
In and the lights are on and the door opens and there's not one human being visible.
Yeah.
And this is where I need to articulate. There's something about it where you're like, I think something horrible just happened here.
Yes.
I'm concerned for my safety. Did what happened? Did CVS attack them? Did a cheetah get loose? Like, and then eventually, you'll hear something like, "I'm back here." Well, you know what?
I'm back here.
Don't be back there.
Yeah.
Don't be back there. And that's exactly what I wanted to be startled by. A voice that I can't see.
Yes.
How about you jump out from behind the magazines with a ski mask on or a hockey
That's
mask.
Terrifying.
It's scary. You're just more scared at night, I think, for some reason.
Right. It's almost like you'd rather there be no people in a Walgreens than one person in a Walgreens. There's something terrifying about just a single person.
Yeah. And the other thing is, like, I understand economics to some degree. Like, you guys are Walgreens.
Yeah.
You have one more employee than a vending machine right now. Like you can't have two guys. You can't have an up here guy and a back there guy.
So I'm gonna back this out and say the thing that we were talking about earlier. How is it about you?
Yeah. That's
how do you feel about it? How do you feel? Does it make you feel scared?
When I walk in there, I feel a little scared, which is I shouldn't be, but as a kid, I wouldn't. In my 30s, 20s, definitely not.
Right.
But in as you get older, you're like, bad stuff happens. Part of it, it's weird because I have a lot of guilt issues. And I don't want to be adjacent to anything that goes wrong because I'm going to get blamed. You know? I think maybe I'm afraid, like, something terrible is going on here. And there's somebody lying dead underneath the counter and the cop's going to be like, this guy.
Yes.
Like, no, man, I just walked in, you know?
Yes.
That might be part of the fear.
Yes.
So, I feel afraid. And then also maybe unreasonably, you know, just that, like, Greg, your life is pretty easy. You're really going to complain about the fact that you got to wait a second or be a little uncomfortable when you walk into a Walgreens.
I guess my question also would be like, what are you getting?
That's a good question. I think if it's late night at Walgreens, it's either it's either medication, like you know, something where I just have a cold,
right?
And I can't
Mucinex
sleep
or something.
Yeah, I can't sleep.
Yeah,
or is like some sort of food binge, which is you're coming in here to eat things that you don't need.
Yes,
and just be completely gluttonous, and you're gonna have a problem with this guy that's working in the back. You know. That's a good, you're right. That's a good point. It's,
I'm trying to buy combos over here, my man.
I have an
eating problem.
I don't know who's binging on combos.
No? That's what I would do.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, if I'm in Springfield, Missouri in the middle of the night.
That's where I was born.
Yeah. We know. You bring it up a lot.
I don't appreciate that.
So you're in Springfield, Missouri, and it's the middle, and you did a gig, and then you just get, this happens to me.
Yeah.
11 o'clock, so hungry.
Yeah.
So hungry. You go to Walgreens. Honestly, I'm just going Nature Valley granola bar, Nutri-Grain bar.
You're binging on Nutri-Grain bars?
Yeah. I'm just trying to fill my body with stuff that will indicate to my brain that I'm full.
Okay.
Fast enough that I don't gain 10 pounds overnight.
Okay, I gotcha. Yeah.
That's all I do at Walgreens. That's my only business with Walgreens. And also my sleepwalking medication. Sometimes in a pinch. I had a story once, but one time I was on the road and I have to take this clonazepam. And it's serious. If I don't take it, like I could jump through a window.
Right.
I mean, I have a real serious thing. And I ran out, you know, I was in my 20s. I was like irresponsible. I ran out of it. I called my doctor. I'm like, I'm in Seattle. I really need this clonazepam.
Yeah.
And my doctor, this woman who was four doctors ago, sleep doctor, she just goes, Mike, what's going on with you? I was like, what do you mean? Why do you need this drug so much? I was just like, you know, you're my doctor. I have REM sleep behavior disorder.
Do people abuse?
Yes.
Okay.
I want to say they might snort it. Like it's clonazepam. It's like an anti-anxiety. Yeah. I think maybe people snort it. I actually don't really know what they do with it, but I know that it's a narcotic.
Okay.
It's a narcotic and it's like, it's hard to get. Like every month or something, it's kind of an ordeal in my life getting it. I have to make, like, in New York State, there you have to have it in triplicate and stuff. Like, it's a whole deal. I mean, Missouri, it's easy to get. I mean, they're hillbillies.
I just thought of it. Yeah, I'll get you some next time. I'll just say, just walk in there.
You know anybody?
My straw hat and
my straw hat.
I just thought of a dumb joke or something if you ever talk about it. You know how they call those drugs? Like you're talking about, like Schedule C or Schedule.
I've never heard that.
Yeah, that the serious drugs are. It's like Schedule C narcotics or Schedule
B.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Or like, there's got to be something funny about digging into that. Be like, I want to see the schedule.
Well, I had this thing about my clonazepam thing is so crazy because I've been on it for 20 years because I have to be on it.
Yeah.
Just recently, I looked at the side effects. Like last week, I'm not even kidding. Last week, I look and it's like depression, and it's like poor motor skills and like loss of memory. And I'm like, that's like my personality.
Yeah.
It's like it's like that moment in your life where you realize your personality is side effects.
I thought I was just that guy. That's how I've been building a persona on this.
Yeah, and like, it's weird because I have to take 1.5 milligrams every night before bed, which means I have to cut uphill in half. You know who shouldn't do that? Someone with poor motor skills. So that's like a bit I've been working on.
Do you have a pill cutter or do you use
I have a pill cutter I snap them and it's all
right. I'm a little concerned. You're showing, she might have been right to ask you that question because she's like, what are you doing that you need this all the time? Also, you said four doctors ago, you're doc hopping.
I know.
And that's what those guys do.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah.
But I didn't doc hop. She moved to
She
Hawaii.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I would do if I were that doctor.
She just was like, I can't take these perpetual phone calls anymore.
I can't take it.
I'm going to the islands.
I had a couple jokes about the road that I kind of don't know what to do with them, but they're funny stories.
Yeah.
And one of them is a person we know in common. So it's I was backstage when I was starting out, opening for this guy in Cleveland.
Yeah.
And I'm writing on my laptop, I'm writing jokes. And he goes, how much you pay for that laptop? I go, I don't know, like maybe like $400. He goes, I gave that laptop for $250. I go, how would you do that? He goes, it's hot, which means it's stolen. And it was that moment where I realized that he was about to steal my laptop and sell it back to me. And he'd be like, it's perfect for you. It's got all your files, photos of your family.
Is this a comic?
Yeah, it's someone you know.
Oh, that's hilarious.
It's a person who we know in common who we both worked with a bunch. And I think we both love him.
Yeah.
And he often boasts about how well his sets go in a way that's like wild. By the way, this is what I'll say about him also, because this won't give away who it is. He said to me one time, he goes, nice guy, steals laptops, but sells stolen laptops.
He doesn't steal laptops. This guy's not a laptop stealer.
He's not.
Yeah.
But he said,
and he would not have stolen your laptop.
And I was emceeing for him middling. I think the headliner was like Angel Salazar.
Yeah. Check it out,
Cleveland. And that was his catchphrase. And I thought I was having pretty good sets. And he goes, you think you're having pretty good sets? He goes, when I was an MC, I used to get standing ovations.
He did
he
say that.
He said standing ovations as an MC. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, I think he got a couple.
I used to get standing ovations as an MC. Are you lying? What is happening here?
I think he
here?
Did get them.
Oh, for real?
He used to murder.
A lot?
I don't know about
that. He was a really good comic.
Yeah.
He may still is, probably.
He gave me advice. Man, that guy that you're talking about gave me advice. It was great advice because he was like, man, stop asking so many questions as an MC. Would you set up every one of your bits with a question?
Interesting.
And I was
to
like,
the audience. Don't ask the audience questions. That's great advice.
Horrible. Yeah, it's great advice. I mean,
right. Is anybody married? Well, I'm, you know, yeah, my yeah. parents,
it's
blah,
terrible.
Blah, blah. Yeah.
It's and I was in that.
Anyone ever been to Iowa? One time I was in Iowa.
Yes.
Who cares?
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's, man, it was great advice. Nobody cares. And you're just breaking up the rhythm. And you're also sort of subtly indicating that you have no confidence at all in anything you're going to say. Like, I got to get you guys on board here before I get into this thing. Let me prime the pump here, you know?
Do you have any road memories starting out that were like, oh, this is a ridiculous scenario that I'm finding myself in? I'll give you like worst gig that you can think of.
Well, I want to say that I didn't have to take as many bad gigs as some of the guys like you that were courageous enough to go right into comedy out of college.
Okay.
Because I had 10 years at a Fortune 500 company.
Right.
Selling the best brand of peanut butter.
All right. Easy.
And, you know, I had money. So I was like, I'm not staying in that hotel. I'll just get my own. You know, like.
Wow. That is different.
It is different. And it's
wild.
It's less romantic. And it probably, I did skip some. I mean, I you know, I ate it plenty of times. I'm trying to remember some of the times when I did. Actually, the worst gig the one that sticks is I had been doing it for a good long time, but I did a gig for the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yeah.
And I ate it hard.
At the park? The ballpark?
No. It was at one of their fundraisers. It was at a hotel.
Okay.
And like Tony La Russa, who's the manager of the Cardinals.
Was Ozzie Guillen in there?
Are you thinking Ozzie Smith?
Ozzie Smith?
He was not there. This was a little bit later. Ozzie Guillen was a manager of the White Sox.
I'm trying to play it cool with the sports
trying
references.
To play it cool. You're just not. You're embarrassing yourself.
Yeah, I know I'm embarrassing myself.
No, I mean, it was one of those things, and I had gotten so far forward on this. I was like, well, I'm a killer these days.
Right.
I'm going to kill here.
Yeah.
Then I'm going to be in the dugout whenever I want. And these guys are going to love me so much that I'm going to be part of the team.
Oh, that's huge.
I'm a lifelong Cardinal fan.
Right.
And it was like this thing where I was doing poorly, and I could tell you the lifetime stats of 20 people that were not laughing at my jokes.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, it was awful. It was like, yeah.
That's That's the great humbling that is stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
Is it doesn't matter how good you are, you're 5 days away from bombing in a way that you could never imagine. All right. The last thing we do is working it out for a cause. And it's basically nonprofit, anyone you give money to over the years, and we'll contribute, and then we link to them in the show notes.
Awesome. St. Louis Ovarian Cancer Awareness. Great organization.
Great. So we will...
SLOCA.
We will we'll link to them in the show notes, and I will contribute to them. Greg, so much fun.
Oh, I loved it,
talking
man.
To you.
It's great.
This is like, I could talk to you all day.
Thank you so much.
You just made me laugh so hard, and congratulations on the special and all the specials. People should watch all of your specials because they're all hilarious.
A couple of them.
Perfect. Perfect.
Working it out because it's not done. We're working it out because there's no one.
That's going to do it for another episode of Working It Out. I love that Greg Warren. Just go to gregwarrencomedy.com for his tour dates and to link through to his special on YouTube. Also, while you're on YouTube, you can watch our episode. This episode is all on YouTube. We have all of those now. We got the Jim Gaffigan. We got Ira Glass. We got a lot of great stuff. Subscribe. Our producers of Working It Out are myself, along with Peter Salamone and Joseph Birbiglia. Associate producer Mabel Lewis. Consulting producer Seth Barish. Assistant producer Gary Simons. Sound mix by Ben Cruz. Supervising engineer Kate Belinsky. Special thanks to Marissa Hurwitz, Josh Upfall, and David Raphael and Nina Quick. My consigliere is Mike Berkowitz. Special thanks to Jack Antonoff and Bleachers for their music. They have a great new single. Special thanks to my wife, the poet J-Hope Stein. You can follow her on Instagram. She's got great new poems at J-Hope Stein on Instagram. Special thanks, as always, to our daughter, Una, who built the original radio fort made of pillows. And thanks most of all to you who are listening. We really appreciate it. If you enjoy it, rate and review it on Apple Podcasts. Watch it on YouTube and subscribe. It really, all that helps us out a lot in making this show that we're so proud of. Thanks most of all to you who are listening. Tell your friends, tell your enemies. Maybe call up the person who introduced you to your wife or a husband or significant other and say, hey, you helped lead me to the person who changed my life for the better. I'd like to repay you. So I'd like to recommend a podcast I think you might enjoy, because that's basically the same thing, right? We'll see you next time, everybody. We're working it out.